on, Bears fans. Another edition of the Chicago Bears podcast coming your way. Pat the Designer, Courtney Cronin in the building. The NFL owners meetings are here, which means fountains are everywhere. Rule changes are happening and coaches are talking. We got Courtney Cronin who's down there on the episode today to break down everything we've heard from Ben Johnson, Ryan Poles, even a little Kevin Warren, a little stadium update, kind of, maybe, not really. All that and more on today's episode of the Chicago Bears podcast. Hit that like button, subscribe to the page, leave a 5-star review. Y'all know what to do. Courtney, how are you down there?
I'm good. It's beautiful, as you can see if you're watching us on YouTube right now. I don't want to leave. The weather is awesome. I heard that there are tornadoes in Chicago, but it's just like where I'm sitting right now is where I've been staked out for the last 2 days. And this is the place, like kind of the main courtyard where you see everybody. You see all the foot traffic. You get to see who's talking to who and, you know, who's rushing off to whatever committee meeting that they're sitting in on. And as we're filming this is when the meeting should be wrapping up. So that means we're going to hear from Roger Goodell in a little bit, kind of state of the NFL, where things stand. There will be questions about the Bears and the stadium, I would imagine, which again, on Wednesday will be when we hear from Kevin Warren officially, hear from George McCaskey for the first time since the passing of his mother, Virginia McCaskey. Yeah. Like there will be a lot. I think the biggest news will come for this team outside of Caleb Williams and the X's and O's and like this, you know, the current state of the team and the roster. The biggest news will come on Wednesday when the president talks and when the chairman talks, because there's a lot of business that does not involve the day-to-day X's and O's of the football team that is at top of mind for most Bears fans.
Yeah, I want to start off with the X's and O's, but I do want to start off with some of the the business side of this, because I think Ryan Poles brought up some really good things. I think that Kevin Warren even mentioned some good things in his interview today. But first, we do got to let you guys know the Chicago Bears podcast brought to you by the Advantage Dealer Group. Find your next Chevy, Toyota, or Acura and drive off in under 60 minutes, or they'll make your first car payment for free. Also brought to you by the Hard Rock Casino in Northern Indiana, Las Vegas style gaming, just 30 minutes from Soldier Field, exit 6, right off of I-80-94. All right, I want to start off here with Ben Johnson, Courtney, because I think we got the most out of Ben Johnson today, out of anybody who we heard talk. And there were so many things that I thought were very good nuggets and takeaways. But starting off, I want to start with Eric Bieniemy, the hire, and him talking about the hire that he made. You saw him basically like light up. There are these moments where it's like, oh, Ben Johnson really likes that guy. And he talked about how he was getting calls and texts from all around the NFL on how good Eric Bieniemy is, and he expects him to push these running backs hard. We know the history of Eric Bieniemy. We know some of the opportunities he didn't get, maybe because of how aggressive he is. What do you think is really the expectation of Ben Johnson and what he's getting in here by bringing in Eric Bieniemy?
Well, I don't think the running back room is complete. And he mentioned that when he was talking about the sheer numbers, because the thing, you need to fill out a 90-man roster. They probably need at least 2 to 3 more in order to be ready for camp after re-signing Travis Homer in the offseason. They've got Ian Wheeler coming back off the ACL tear. There's DeAndre Swift. There's Roschon Johnson. That's 4. So realistically, you probably need 6. So at least 2 more, maybe another. But one of those very well could be a high-end player, somebody that they draft in the early rounds to upgrade that room. And this is, you know, it's interesting how Ben Johnson views DeAndre Swift, because his first year as the offensive coordinator in 22 was Swift's last season with Detroit. So, like, clearly there was something that he didn't love about the running back, because the running back was expendable and able to go, you know, to move. They were able to move him to Philly. So I'm curious, like, what did you see in him back then that you're trying to fix now? What did you see in him in Chicago last year that you're trying to fix this season? What did you see in him in his career year in Philly? And like, I think Ben Johnson mixed a lot of positives. Like, I'm excited to work with this player. Does he necessarily, like, will it be Sonic and Knuckles? Maybe, maybe not. They certainly need to upgrade the room if they want to get that sort of combination that he had with Jahmyr Gibbs and with David Montgomery. That was a very strategic way that they built that running back room. They don't have that in Chicago right now. No. But they do have somebody who has the familiarity within this offense, has the familiarity with this play caller, and needs to do some things to get to his next level. And Ben Johnson pointed it out, like, don't just be looking for the home run play. Stop trying to always just hit the hole. Like, sometimes, obviously, you want to hit the hole and, like, you know, make a positive gain. But sometimes a 2 yard, 3 yard gain is fine. The getting the dirty plays in there and picking up the like the chunk yardage can still move the offense forward without having to look for the home run every single time. So like him pointing that out about DeAndre Swift, I thought was, you know, point just very relevant for what happened last year, to where there were some good explosive moments. You can look back to the Carolina game and really the Rams game, I think, before that, when Swift started to get it going. It felt like he's starting to put, you know, some good things on film. That was the back that they had expected when they, you know, paid all that money for him in free agency. Yeah. And then it was like, it just kind of was like a roller coaster all season. There'd be some good moments, there'd be some not so good moments. So I think it's very interesting how he talked about the running backs that Eric Bieniemy in turn is going to get to coach, because Bieniemy said is going to coach the piss out of him. You know, it's a typical football guy talk. It just sounds like somebody who's very excited to be around a coach who is, you know, coached that position for a very long time. He's had, you know, 22 decades experience in West Coast offenses. He brings a lot of knowledge about how to meld this run game with what Ben Johnson wants to do, or at least what Ben Johnson believes will help meld the run game into the overall philosophy of the offense. And he's excited about it. I mean, he's a big name. He was one of the bigger names that was available going from the college ranks back into the NFL as a position coach. And, you know, it just kind of speaks to how many big name coaches that Ben Johnson was able to get on his staff when Eric Bieniemy of all coaches is your running backs coach. And that's exciting for him as he built his staff. And I think that in talking to Ryan Poles about that separately, he felt that same thing too, of like, wow, this guy's getting some pretty big names, a lot of guys with expertise to be position coaches and to put all these philosophies together to build something that's going to be sustainable for a change.
No, yeah, I love it, right? Because when you hear, right, you're receiving texts from multiple people around the NFL that you just got the best running backs coach that you can go out there and get. And on top of that, right, like when you hear Eric Bieniemy talk, he was on with Jeff Joniak on Chicago Bears, etc. And I mean, Eric Bieniemy basically was like, listen, we think DeAndre Swift has talent. I like this guy. I think he has a great work ethic that can be very useful here. He just needs to know he can get 4.5 yards between the tackles while still being able to hit the home run. Those kind of comments to me are the coaches basically saying, we got to coach him. Like we can't sit here and just let them go out there and, hey, figure it out while you're out there, trial by fire. No, we have to coach these guys up. We have to change the things that they've been a part of, because a lot of these guys have been a part of some regimes that it hasn't gone as well for them. And that's why, like, hearing that about Eric Bieniemy, hearing, you know, how excited people were, how excited Ben Johnson seems anytime he talks about him, it just reminds me of that at the end of that press conference when he's like, it's going to be fun.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what I get from Eric Bieniemy.
Yeah, I think, like, the whole coaching these guys, like the coaching element, because Joniak asked Ben about this earlier, like, you know, are these players going to be coached hard? And yes, that's a no-brainer question. Like you say, of course they will be. But given what we saw last year and how, you know, that became such a talking point of, are they actually being coached hard? Are they being held accountable? Like, accountability became such a buzzword that when Ben Johnson says that about the coaching style that the Bears are going to get out of Eric Bieniemy, there should never, ever, ever be brought up a point this year that the Bears players are not being coached hard, because this is what they asked for. So be careful what you ask for. Like, if it ends up going the other side, where you're like, well, no, we didn't want all that, then, you know, beggars can't be choosers. But I think just given what their clear priorities were leaving the season, you had players who were complaining that they didn't feel they were being held accountable, which then led to the lack of success that they had on the field. Okay, so you course corrected that with the coaches that you believe will provide that level of accountability, provide that level of coaching in an offense that's, you know, bound to be more successful, because we've seen it be successful somewhere else, but bound to be more successful here when you have a young quarterback who you're trying to get the most out of. So it all goes hand in hand, but I do really feel that, like, that tangible level of excitement, I don't think we had any coaches talk that way last year in Chicago. I mean, there were times where it was like, yeah, this is a good hire. Like, we're excited, you know, to have so-and-so here. Like, I know that, you know, Matt Eberflus talked about when Thomas Brown took over as the offensive coordinator, that he's, you know, sharp coach, et cetera, like, you know, going to hold these guys accountable. You could feel the energy, whatever. like, now that you have a clean slate approach, and really what Ben Johnson was trying to preach to the players, or plans to preach to the players in all of this when he has his first team meeting next week, when he, like, stands up in front of the room, is that last year's team was last year's team. We're moving forward. It's a different staff. He used the word regime, new regime. Like, it's time to do things differently. And that starts with, it's everything down from, like, the new offense, the new things that Caleb Williams is going to be asked to do within this offense, all the way down to the way that coaches are going to coach players in a different form than they were coached last year.
Yeah, listen, you talk about players being coached hard, and you mentioned Caleb Williams. I think he is one player that Ben Johnson is going to absolutely be coaching hard. And Ben talked about the development of Caleb Williams and some of the things that he wants to tweak in his game. I thought that that was very interesting when he was asked about that, because usually that's the sign where, like, your ears perk up and it's like, oh, God, you're going to, like, start changing footwork and change how this guy, and now he's going to be broken. When he talks about making changes to Caleb Williams, though, he's talking about, again, the fundamentals around the game, the things that, you know, being at the line of scrimmage instead of, like he said, he spent most of his career in the shotgun. How do you think that's going to go over in that relationship?
I think that because there was a lot of talk when Caleb was first drafted last year about the work that he was doing with his private quarterbacks coach to get the footwork down, so that his drops when he was under center, whether it was a play action drop back, would be, you know, where it needed to be. Now, they ran plays, just under 30% of their plays came from under center last year. That was, like, middle of the pack in the NFL, like, deadlocked right at 16. The Lions under Ben Johnson ran, you know, under center plays 56.4% of the time, the highest rate of any team since 2020. And, like, over the last three seasons, they've had the highest usage of play action in the NFL based off of the off-center things, the under-center things that they're doing. So yeah. I think it's a way to play to the strength of your quarterback, because there's a lot of times you're rolling him away from pressure. When you get in a straight drop-back game, it makes it so predictable for defenses to know how to tee off on you. They've upgraded the offensive line. Now comes a chance where you get to put those upgrades in action by putting the quarterback on the move, changing his launch points, deepening where his drops are. So it's not all, like, the same thing every single time. It's just something that he's going to have to get used to. He ran 7 plays from under center in college between USC and Oklahoma. And most of them at USC, I believe, if not all of them, were goal line plays. And then there was a 4th and 20-something. There's some, like, weird, like, one weird one at Oklahoma, and there's another one that, like, it was a short yard situation just to get the first down. So yeah. I say all that to say, you throw those numbers at you, he hasn't run it much. So when he gets in the building next week, it's not like they're going to be in the weight room. Like, that's phase one of the off-season program, and they get to start earlier than most teams because they have a new coach. But this will be a couple weeks at least before they're on the field actually getting to see what Caleb Williams under center looks like. So I think for Ben to bring him in and say, we're going to push you out of your comfort zone from the very start.
Yeah.
There's no miscalculating expectations at that point. It's no, this is what we're going to do. This is what the offense looked like in Detroit when it was at its most successful. This is how you can be successful within it and not expecting that everything's going to be a carbon copy of what it was in Detroit, but putting himself in a position to where he can be a better quarterback because he can be a more dimensional quarterback and not feel like, you know, all I do is I'm in shotgun every single time. Like, I think adding that part to his repertoire is going to increase the play action usage, which is going to be better for a quarterback like him who does better when he's making off platform throws and, you know, going, you know, being put on the move. We didn't see a lot of that last year. So it should benefit him in a lot of different ways, including, like, frankly, just switching it up. But I thought that was an interesting thing that Ben Johnson pointed out. He's like, I wouldn't even say hinting. He's telling us this is what the offense is going to look like. It's going to require this. Because last year we were told, oh, he's going to be under center a lot more, and he wasn't.
Yeah. No, that's the thing for me, right? Putting him in a position where – I love how Ben said it when he first got here, and he was looking right at Caleb Williams and DJ Moore.
It was
Caleb, Rome, DJ, and Cole.
He said, it's going to take more than you.
Yeah, it's going to take more than you, and be prepared to be uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. That there's a lot of – the uncomfortability that this team is going to have to go through in the beginning, where you didn't have to deal with this. You mentioned, right, being coached hard. You mentioned the accountability. There's a lot of things that with Flus, You didn't have to go through. I like the fact that he's starting off by saying, listen, this is how we're going to be successful. And early on, you are going to be uncomfortable doing this, but we're going to get you to that point. Like, those are the things that I think do make a quarterback take that next step, get to that next level where you can put him in shotgun, you can put him under center, and there's nowhere where he's not at his best. Yeah. I think that also, like you said, it's going to help him in the run game a ton. And just the fact that he's coming at this from an analytical viewpoint here. He had such an emphasis on EPA per play. Courtney, as a football nerd, I got very excited when he started talking about EPA per play and how that's going to affect some of the play calling, affect how they're going to go for things. That's going to be such a change from what we saw under Matt Eberflus, who was very much, you know, don't take as many chances, play it safe, and we'll get the defense out of here.
Yeah, I thought it was interesting that he pointed it out that way. Like, that's a very specific statistical measure of quarterback success that within the last couple of years he's really pivoted to, where he's not just looking at, are you turning the ball over, are you not turning the ball over. You know, those 5 years ago, he said that that was probably how he would measure quarterback success, in addition to, you know, the usual stuff like, you know, points, touchdowns, like all the things that, you know, require an offense to be really good. But like, I thought this was, you know, a really interesting answer, and I'm trying to find the quote here because like Ryan Poles was like, you know, said that that does affect kind of like his scouting process to a degree. Because like it all starts from the offensive line. Like you have like a well-rounded group that all starts up front, because if you have a good group that can protect your quarterback, chances are your quarterback's going to have more success in the passing game. So frankly, it all goes hand in hand. It's very simple, but like he said, like Ben Johnson was talking about this, and he said, I would have said 5 years ago, turnovers, takeaways, that was the number one measure of success for a quarterback. But now, because it's a passing league, and it's been a passing league, you know, the team that has the higher EPA per play at the end of the game, 80% of the time, that team is going to win. So more times than not, it's an easy way to be like, all right, can we find ourselves in that statistical measure by the end of games? Because we'll feel confident about what our offense looks like when we have a quarterback who is, you know, it's expected points added per drop back, per pass play. Yep. If you can be in a situation where that number is higher, and like that means your quarterback is not a net negative to the team, that your quarterback, and like not, you don't even have to do it just from, you know, he said that they're still going to take their chances. It's not just like throws over the middle of the field, or, you know, like, you know, just taking the check down. Like, there's a lot of measures that go into what makes a successful offense. Completion percentage being high up, that's one of them. Run after the catch opportunities for receivers and running backs, that's like moving the ball forward, however you can do it, like the simplest terms.
Yeah,
that's one of them. But he's like, that's not to say we're not going to take shots down the field and look for big explosive plays or touchdowns that way. The chunk yardage will still be there if they're able to get it. And we saw a lot of different ways that Detroit was able to do that with Ben Johnson as their offensive coordinator. I think that should excite Bears fans, because you have somebody who's looking at a very modern metric of what makes some of the best passing offenses in the NFL. Detroit was one of them. The Cincinnati Bengals, even when they struggled last year, like the offense was still like at its peak from like December, the first week of December onward, because they were so focused on that, feeding Ja'Marr Chase, feeding T. Higgins. All of the things that made that offense successful are things that the Bears would like to be. And you look at some of the best offenses in the NFL, like there's common metrics that translate from one to the other, and that's what the Bears are striving to be with Ben Johnson. And more than just like numbers, I know people sometimes drown out stats or like stuff that doesn't make sense, that sounds like just like a lot of like mumbo jumbo. Like, if you can see it affect the offense in a way where it's like, this is an efficient, methodical attack, that is one of the better ones in the NFL, that scores a lot of points, then it's a no-brainer that it's going to look good, and that it's going to like yield a good result.
Yeah, listen, but Baltimore is number one in EPA last season. The Bills are two. Detroit's three. Washington four. Tampa five. Philly six. What do those teams have in common? They're good.
Playoff teams, yep.
Yeah, all playoff teams. Bears were 26, right? The Patriots are down there. The Cowboys were down there, who had a down season. Giants are below them. Like, it's literally the stat that I think probably – when you talk about accounting for game situation, down and distance, when you talk about accounting for field position and whether you should go for a play or should not, it's one of those things where last season there were all of these moments where, right, Flus is going for a field goal because it's the safe play here. Yeah, but you're right there, and the EPA dictates that maybe you need to be going to try and get this play here. It's the moments where when I looked at the offense last season, it made sense why they weren't able to put up points or why they were stagnating versus just, you know, the actual production of whatever the player on the field was actually able to do. There were so many times where it's taken out of those players' hands. All of the offenses at the top of this as well are some of the most aggressive offenses in football.
Yeah, and look at what we know about the Detroit Lions. I think it was 151 fourth down attempts since Dan Campbell took over for Matt Patricia in 2021. Not all of that. Obviously, Dan Campbell is Dan Gamble, and he goes for it. But, like, who's – the trickle-down effect's right there. It's Ben Johnson. That's numbers. That's, like, the probabilities, the analytics part, that you should have an offense that's going to take chances. Like he said, within, like, getting – like, how do you get that metric up? How do you consistently feed into that higher completion percentage, the run after the catch opportunities, making it easier for your quarterback to move the offense down the field? But, like, also knowing that you are going to take some risk. You're going to take some shots down the field. You're going to be confident that you have the right personnel to do that, which, again, he mentioned just kind of, like, what, you know, what they like. He's talked about, like, some of the players that, you know, they've got in free agency, some of the draft prospects that they really like. I mentioned Tyler Warren on the CHGO podcast yesterday. Like, that should excite Bears fans, because that's a do-it-all tool that if the Bears add him, I think you'd think that, like, okay, this offense is going to be able to take off in more ways than one, not just based on one player, but how he would fit. And collectively, just how this whole thing works out for, like, what their draft strategy is going to be. Like, they laid out a good foundation today, I think, of just, like, what this thing could look like when they get the type, even they're able to add even more players to the fit that they have right now. And that's, like, that's a good thing that, like, they don't, I mean, no one's ever going to tell you, man, we feel like we failed in free agency. We didn't do enough. We didn't address enough. We have to, like, wait till the draft to get everything done. I think they're in a really comfortable spot knowing that for year two of Caleb Williams' growth, they're going to have to, like, make sure that he's surrounded by the right type of players to make sure that that metric that they look at for the success of the passing game is consistently on the positive end versus, like, the negative end.
Yeah, and listen, you bring up the draft and kind of what can play into that, where the Bears may go at 10 with how they want to run this offense. They've made a ton of moves that have made – I don't want to say safe, but I think it's made it easier for you to feel comfortable going into the season with some of the pieces that you had last season on the offensive end and not having to make massive changes. Of course, speaking about the left tackle position, we heard that from Ben Johnson and from Ryan Poles today. And that's been the position that I think most people have said, if it's not Ashton Jeanty, find a way to get you a left tackle at the top of this draft or trade back and go get a Gray Zabel or a Josh Simmons, somebody who can play that left tackle position. That doesn't sound like it's how Ben Johnson and it's how Ryan Poles are talking. And when I heard how, you know, Ben Johnson kind of gave the update on Braxton Jones on where he's at injury-wise and some of the things that he wants to see him do so that he can be on the field, I thought it was very interesting that he said, how much he runs the football, that he said, listen, my offensive lineman got to be good in pass pro. That's of what course. We need to see.
Yeah.
And it makes perfect sense. Hey, protect the quarterback, but the things about adding weight to Braxton Jones and what he sees out of Karan Amagaji, I thought those were some of the biggest takeaways, because it doesn't sound like the Bears are chomping at the bit to go out there and draft the left tackle at the top of this draft.
I think they said all of the right things to keep their options open. But, like, if we start at the beginning of that, Braxton Jones is not going to be 100% at the start of training camp. How could he be? Like, he broke his ankle and had to have season-ending surgery the week of December 22nd after they played the Detroit Lions. So naturally, he's going to be behind the eight ball. He's probably not going to be taking first-team reps, certainly not this spring, not during training camp, or at least the early on part where it sounds like he's going to be limited trying to get back into football shape. And who knows? What if he has a setback? What if he has something else happen? What if he's not the same player? What if he's, you know, has to favor that ankle for a while and it just doesn't, things just don't go right. You have to have a contingency plan for that position. not just for the now, but thinking how you could use that contingency plan to build for the future. I look at this whole situation with, like, because I asked polls about this earlier, and I asked Ben Johnson just about, like, the tackle spot. Like, what do you like about Braxton Jones? And, you know, after he was talking about the injury update, he mentioned how, like, said absolutely when he was asked, can this guy play left tackle in your offense? And he said maybe he could gain some weight, you know, certainly to help with his anchor and pass protection. What do we always talk about with Braxton Jones? That, like, and he's been very honest about combating a bull rush. That's something that's a skill that he just consistently has to work at. So if they're encouraging him to put some weight on this offseason, I think that that's a big part why, just knowing, like, what they've seen the last couple of years. And I don't think that's asking for too much, especially if you're a starting left tackle in the NFL, but also realizing if you're not, they've got Karan Amagaji behind you. And I think both were very quick to point out, Ryan Poles and Ben Johnson, Karan was not necessarily put in the best spot last year because of how he started his career. I mean, yeah, he played in Washington a little bit because they were dealing with injury, but then, like, his first real start being the Minnesota game and just kind of knowing what we know about that, doing that on the road, that was an awful idea. Like, they don't hold it against him, but I do think that this was somebody last year coming off the injury. Ben Johnson said he looked at him as a developmental prospect that he was excited about when he was going through the draft process. The Bears bring him in. He has a chance now to show that he could be the left tackle of the future, especially if Braxton Jones is not able to go right away, which he's not. It's not like he's going to be able to. But I also just don't rule out the possibility of a left tackle at 10. The measurables of some of these tackles, the positions in which they play, or do the Bears really want to move, you know, Armon Membo off of the right tackle spot and make him a left tackle? Yeah. I don't know. Like, I mean, I don't know if that's the right play. I don't know if they think it's the right play, but there is a lot to, you know, listen to here and how complicated this can be because you have a lot of different options. And Poles said, you know, specifically when it comes to the left tackle, he's like, is this guy going to make us better year one, year two, or year three? How do we feel about the guys that they currently have? None of these coaches have had a chance to work with any of these players before, so that factors in too before they have to get to the draft and make a decision. But, like, I think he's like, if we have two or three guys that we think are in that spot, they may not be there at 10 either, meaning that the run on tackles could start earlier. So, like, they're going to have to, like, prepare for a lot of different situations that pop up because – this is a position that, like, when you're sitting at 10, you can get a franchise guy to be your left tackle for a decade. Like, a lot of teams see it that way. So I think they could go a bunch of different paths at 10. It was interesting. Like, pass rusher didn't come up nearly as much today as, like, an option for the 10th overall pick. Of course, people are still going to link the Bears to that, just given what they did with free agency. But I felt like the conversation was much more centered around left tackle today at that spot and at running back.
Do you feel like Poles' comments on the draft talent and kind of how when you get to the second round or get kind of past the first digits, tier of guys, those top tier guys, it kind of starts to even out. You're getting good talent through most of these picks here when you get into the 20s, the 30s, the 40s, the 50s. Do you feel like those kind of comments make the Bears more likely or less likely to try and grab a blue chip piece, even if it's not there at 10, maybe even move up? We heard, I think it was Chris Emma from Up the Dial dropped the nugget yesterday that the Bears have explored the idea of trading up go get a piece and that it would cost you a little bit less in this draft because of that lack of talent. Is it more likely that the Bears may try to obtain a blue chip piece in any way because it is kind of that, I think it's been described a couple times, meat and potatoes kind of draft.
Yeah, and I think that that's a big part of it because what Poles said is that when you're looking at guys who are in the single digits, the blue chip prospects, however you want to, like, classify it, there's not that many of them this time around. And that's normal when you have a draft class that doesn't have much heavy quarterback talent like last year, that you have a group of skill players that, you know, aren't expected to be top 10 picks. You've got, like, I mean, your defensive players who, you know, are highlighting this draft class are Abdul Carter and Travis Hunter for right now. That's great, but there's just not, like, an overwhelming amount of can't miss. This guy's going to be a Hall of Famer, a 10-year Pro Bowler, whatever it is. So I think they can get creative with it. Now, the whole idea of them like trying to trade up to go get somebody in the first, you know, like much higher than 10, like A, where are you trading to? B, if you don't need a quarterback, why would you give up quarterback style draft capital to go move up and get it? Because there's going to be a future first that's included in that, more than likely to be able to move up a bunch of spots. And who are you targeting? If Ashton Jeanty is like the apple of their eye and they know that like would they have to have him to create the backfield that Ben Johnson wants, you're going to have to move up to get him. I really like don't believe that he's going to make it past the Las Vegas Raiders. So how do you get in front of the Raiders at six? Where does that come from? Like, and so what are you giving up to get there? Is it worth it? Are you truly a running back away? And I don't know if they are yet. Like that to me, I was like, if you have a pick at the top 10, drafting for a potential now need, like let's say if it is left tackle and Braxton Jones not ready and whoever you draft is, it beats out everybody because you create competition and that's good in training camp, then you address the now and you address the later. So I don't think you can go wrong with either one of those, but the idea, like, there's got to be teams. I mean, the idea of moving back, of course, every team right now that's like 10 and onwards wants to say, like, oh, yeah, we'll move back. There's going to be somebody who wants to jump up. Jump up for who?
Yeah.
Like, these are a lot of skill. There are a lot of skill players. Like, there's no receiver that's going to be taken in the top 10. Who would be moving up for and where? Like, I would be very skeptical to think that it's going to be like an easy exercise for them to try to move up when it feels like that their positions like of need that, especially in the, like the, of the top talent, like the can't miss prospects, there's so few of them. Whereas he said, you know, all the way from like the single digits, like later single digits to 50s, 60s and 70s, you have good starters. But is that worth giving up the type of draft capital? Probably not for like the majority of those players, just based on kind of how polls talked about it today.
Only situation, and even this, I know it's murky with some people now. The only situation I'd see it is if you do get the overlove of the quarterback position early, and now all of a sudden you're sitting there at five or six, and Abdul Carter's still on the board. But even then, right, Abdul Carter's on the board. Why would I give you Abdul Carter? Like, that's kind of the conversation that I think it all plays into. And it'll be interesting to see, for me, if the Bears do go after – what they view as a blue chip player, no matter what there, because I think Tyler Warren can be called a player like that. And you see how Ben Johnson lights up. You mentioned Ashton Jeanty. I think that's a player. Mason Graham. We've got like four or five that it feels like that is a can't miss prospect. Go get that guy. But are they going to fall to you at 10? Are you going to have to move up? And I don't know if I agree with, I do think it would cost you less to move up this year in the draft than probably last year's draft by a lot. But I don't know if I agree with the fact that, like, the situation that was laid out was you can get away with just giving up a single second-round pick or a single third-round pick.
No way. Not in the slightest. I do not believe that to be true. That would just, destroy anybody's draft, like, value chart. Like, for what? You're throwing it away for, like, 1 year because you don't think the prospects are that good? Like, teams aren't going to do that. Teams aren't going to just try to, like, rewrite, like, what the value is on draft picks because that they think that like this might be a down year, because what somebody views as a down year might be the perfect draft for another team to address needs. I don't think the value is going to change all that much.
Yeah, a lot of all pros out of the 2016 draft. That was a down year at the quarterback position, and Zeke Elliott was the prize in that one. I do want to talk about this before we get into the Kevin Warren situation to finish things out here. But Ryan Poles brought up Kyler Gordon's contract extension. Yep. Didn't say too much that we haven't heard before, but it does seem like, and he said this as well, that Kyler Gordon is a priority for this team. He is somebody that he really wants to get re-signed. You see it when he's talking, and it seems like he really sees the value of Kyler Gordon, especially with the new defensive scheme. Mm-hmm. When do you think we might actually see some traction on that start to pick up? Because I would assume that's one of those deals that you are moving contracts around and changing signing bonuses and different things like that to get done.
Yeah, because he told those players, anybody who was up for a contract extension, so certainly Kyler would have come to mind, that like at the end of the season, like they didn't have a coaching staff in place because they fired the old one and had like all this time that has passed that they've had to like figure out who are the right coaches to coach these players, who are the right players to be in the system. Like, use this as an example. Like, Dennis Allen comes in. It's an attacking defense, and it's a defense that specifically with its defensive linemen want to get after They want to get after the quarterback. There's not as much lateral movement. There's not a lot of, you know, two gapping, you know, even penetration that way. It's win your matchup against the offensive lineman. Do you have the right defensive line for that? Very clearly, they went out in free agency and got those types of players to fit Dennis Allen's defense. Dennis Allen, one of the first players, actually the only player he named by name when he had his last media availability in January, was Kyler Gordon. Yeah. So you know how they feel, like how the current front office and their new coaching staff and current front office feel about him. But I think that they're going to want to see him just like, you know, could they sign him tomorrow? Sure. But do I think that they're going to want to like see him get into the offseason program, just get like familiar with these new coaches first to see if it's the right fit? That seems like that would make a lot of sense. You have the tape on the player. You know the player's really good. You know he's dealt with some injuries over the years, but has been able to overcome them and come back healthy. I think he's in a really good spot to get a contract extension, I'd say, before training camp. I don't know if it'll have to go as far as training camp, but he's like, we've seen DJ Moore's deal get done, like, right on the eve of training camp. Cole Kmet a couple years ago, the same thing. Teams typically end up following their same calendars, where this is not going to be something that drags into like week one, you know, of the season, wondering if it's going to happen. I feel like they'll reward him this offseason. And Paul said it's a priority to have him. So if you take him at face value, like that means, okay, they'll get something done.
Only wonder I would have is there any, or because the contracts are different, you're not worried about it at all, but is there anything of how the Jalen Johnson contract situation went down? It seemed like Ryan Poles wanted him the entire time, but it was like, hey, listen, you're going to make a lot of money. Mm-hmm. Go find the value. Go see if somebody wants you. Go see if somebody wants to trade for you. We went through all of this, and at the end of the season, Jalen Johnson balls out, and he ends up paying more than what he probably would have had to get.
Are they going to make every player bet on themselves in order to get a contract? In theory, yeah. Like, in theory, you want players to bet on themselves so you get the best version of them when they're going into their contract year, and then you pay them at that market value, knowing that they're probably more chances than not going to, like, match that production again. I don't think that's like Ryan Poles' way of doing business, that it's going to be like that every single time. There's certain circumstances that you probably want to make, you know, they drafted Kyler Gordon. They didn't draft Jalen Johnson. So I think that certainly factors in to why that situation played out the way that it did. But Kyler said at the Ed Block Courage Award, like the banquet a couple of weeks ago, that he's like ready for the opportunity to bet on himself. If it came to that he didn't feel pressed any type of way, like, oh, I have to get this done before the season starts. I think he's okay with it either way. I just don't think that this is Ryan Poles' first draft pick. The optics of making him, you know, work for it, like, you've been doing that for 3 years and that's fine, but like you kind of want to do right by your guys, especially to set a precedent for free agents and anybody else coming here, that the Bears are going to take care of you if you take care of what you need to do. And it'll be interesting to see how and when that plays out, because I fully anticipate they'll get something done with him, just in the way they talk about
it. I hope so. Love having Kyler here. The final thing I want to touch on that I've heard from the owners meeting right now is the Kevin Warren talking about the stadium here. And listen, the stadium conversation, I feel like at this point we're talking about, you know, where it's going to be. This is like at the end of Jurassic World, where they go, oh, you know, the dinosaurs part raptor. Oh, that was the worst kept secret in the movie. We knew that an hour and a half ago. You could have told us that. Arlington Heights and Chicago are the final two spots. Kevin Warren talked about that today, that they're really going to be looking to get something done here. Is that a surprise at this point to you, Courtney, that we've kind of finalized it down to that, and that maybe the new mayor coming in is what finally gets this thing pushed over the top in Arlington Heights?
I don't think it's a surprise. I think what would make everybody's life a lot easier and Bears fans probably happier to know one way or the other is if Kevin Warren comes in on Wednesday and says, we tried, we're pivoting back to Arlington Heights. That's where our sole focus is, because they've now gone 2 years without breaking ground. They own the land in Arlington Heights. There don't seem to be the same sort of holdups that they have with the city the way that they used to. So, like, why is it taking so long to get something done? Now, why it's taking so long is because the Bears had held out hope for so long that they would get taxpayer dollars to help them build the new stadium on the Soldier Field site in the South Lot. But the longer this thing has gone on, the more and more likely it is that they're moving to Arlington Heights because they already own the land. They don't have as many hoops that they have to jump through. But
yeah,
it would just be nice if they would just come out and say it. Legally, I think they'd be fine doing it because they are the landowners in Arlington Heights. They don't have to worry about that part. And the funding for that itself would just be a much easier route to take to get that taken care of than holding out hope that you're going to get $2 billion in taxpayer dollars to help put this thing together, which doesn't feel feasible at all.
It seems a lot. It's a good way to say it. It seems like a lot of this is, at this point, how to make this look the best for essentially what feels like, and I'm sure Kevin Warren wouldn't view it as that, but wasting 2 years when this is the spot you could have broken ground on. That's how it feels to me when I look at it, like not trying to save face, but also almost like let's soften the blow of the fact that we just wasted 2 years.
Yeah, because like he talks about shovels in the ground in 2025. Well, you have to decide on a site at some point too. And you know, if they can do that, and I know that there will probably be some blowback either way, whatever happens, like you have to expect that in a position like his, that there will be someone who's not happy about it, or a portion of fans weren't happy about it, but more people are not happy about the thing dragging out than like the team just making an ultimate decision one way or the other. I think it'd be really wise if they came out on Wednesday and said, we're sorry, anybody who wanted to stay in Chicago, like we wanted to stay too, but it didn't work. We're going to go start building our new stadium now. Cause economically, from what Karen Murphy said, I don't know the exact number offhand, but I remember she was talking about like millions and millions of dollars that are being lost by the stadium not being built like each month after a certain amount of time last year. So we'll see.
We'll see what the Bears end up doing. Before we get out of here, Courtney, was there anything down there that you saw or you heard that made you just go, well, that's interesting?
Well, I just think it's, you never hear an owner admit fault the way that Jimmy Haslam did with the DeAndre Deshaun Watson stuff. I don't know what his market is now. It's really interesting because this is not a situation where they're going to ever recoup the like any sort of value on this contract. It's completely sunk cost. You've paid him $230 million guaranteed. You're going to owe him every damn penny of that until the very end because I don't think a team's going to pick him up. There won't be offset language you have to like write into. It's a mess, and the guy's not playing quarterback for at least another year because he just ruptured his Achilles in the offseason. So I just thought it was really unique that an owner was willing to – because usually these owners, these GMs are trying to tell you, like, oh, no, this person's really good. Like, and then behind closed doors are like, hey, sucks, is awful, because they don't want to tank the person's value. It's effectively what Jimmy Haslam did when he was talking about Deshaun Watson, and I don't think there's going to be a market for him at all.
Yeah, well, we've heard some interesting comments from owners. Jerry Jones apparently being very vocal about the Micah Parsons situation. Micah Parsons quote tweeted it.
Yeah, wouldn't even mention Micah Parsons' agent, David Mulgeto, saying, like, I only do business like directly with the players. Well, your player clearly doesn't want to do it that way. And that's his prerogative to have an agent to not have to go about it that way.
I love the fact that he's like, I don't even know his name. And I'm like, you mean one of the like most popular agents in football? You know his
Justin
name.
Justin Fields, right? Agent. Like, he's had several Bears players. He's had a lot of the best players in the NFL. He absolutely knows his name.
You don't got to get disrespectful, Jerry, but that's what these negotiations sometimes do. We appreciate you for keeping us updated on everything happening down there, Courtney. Enjoy the sun. It is sunny out, but it is a little chilly up here, so stay down there as long as you can, and we appreciate you guys for tuning in. As always, hit that like button, subscribe to the page, leave a 5-star view. Y'all know what to do. For Courtney Cronin, who's soaking up the sun for a few more hours, it's your boy Pat the Designer back at it again. Y'all stay safe out there, Chicago. Bear down. One love. Peace.